Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the Business Marketing Club. The BMC is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. But if this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. In today's rapidly changing business landscape, the importance of inclusive leadership in cultivating a thriving organizational culture has grown still more. Today's Business Marketing Club podcast is devoted to culture expert Joanne Lockwood, who describes and delves into the critical role of inclusive leadership in fostering a positive and productive workplace environment. Joanne, welcome to our podcast.
Thanks, Dave. It's an absolute honour and pleasure to be here again with you today.
It's brilliant to see you again. So before we dive in, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of, if you will, your almost qualifications to be talking about this.
Ooh. Yeah, that's always a tricky one, because I always steer away from describe myself as an expert in anything, because you start end up in a battle of experts. But let me give you some lived experience as to how I got to sit in this chair and have this conversation with you today. So for many years of my life, I ran an IT company from probably my early 20s. And I was supporting small businesses in the kind of Hampshire area south of the UK. I grew it to around 15, 20 staff, turned over 3.3 million, I think, at one point. But I got to my late 40s, and I realized that I was heading in the wrong direction. You know, you sit on this conveyor belt of life doing what's expected of you without necessarily focusing on what joy and what expectations you want to have in your life. And I think maybe that's a 40-something thing or a 50-something thing. You get to that stage of your life, you start to reevaluate. Kids are leaving home. And I kind of realized for many years that IT wasn't my destiny. I also realized that something that had been in the back of my head for many, many years, my gender identity, was also not bringing me joy. Right. So a combination of those two things and a few other dimensions in my personal life, kids leaving home, as I say, it knocks you into a different orbit. And I think I just got brave one day and hit that stop button on the conveyor belt of life and said, hang on a minute. I took my luggage off, parked to one side, and thought, actually, IT is not where I want to be. And really, I need to do something about my gender identity. I need to transition, for want of a better way of describing it. So some of those things were easier than others. Yeah, neither of those things were easy, let's be honest. My mental health was suffering in mid-2016. I kind of made my mind up that I was going to gender transition, but I felt kind of trapped by circumstance, trapped by my career, trapped by the business I owned or co-owned with my business partners, and not seeing a way out, a logical path to move into a different agenda. My family were obviously getting used to the idea. That wasn't an easy time, a lot of negotiation going on there. So to cut a long story short, my business partners offered to buy me out in the November that year, probably because they got wind of the fact that I was trans and talking about it openly in my private life, just not in my business life.
Right.
And I evolved the conversation with my wife to a point where she was supportive and our children were kind of accepting. So that's kind of where I got to, sort of end of 2016. Sold the business. And I always say, it was around the 27th of February 2016. And I always say that I count the transition day as the 1st of March. So it's quite opportune. Today is the 1st of March,
2024. Yes. Happy anniversary.
Yes. Happy anniversary. So, yeah, it was the 1st of March 2017. I'd sold my business. I'd signed on a bit of papers. There I was, sat on the end of my bed. thinking, what do I do now? I had a pile of money in the bank. I had a family that were kind of okay, still needed a bit of triage, a bit of TLC, but they were okay. And I always had this big idea to promote trans awareness to businesses and organizations. I didn't know what that meant. I like the idea of professional speaking. I like the idea of standing up and talking and inspiring. And so that was my business plan, if you like. Stand up on stage, speak, and get paid for it. That's kind of, yeah, that was the embryonic element of my business plan.
And it's kind of how we then came into contact, isn't it? Because you kindly presented at the London branch of our Business Marketing Club meeting in January of 2024.
Yeah. I didn't know there was such a thing as professional speaking. I fell into that terminology as well, because I was at I went to a Female Entrepreneurs Network event in Portsmouth, and they had a presenter talking about DISC profiling and other kind of HRE leadership stuff. And someone in the audience sort of said, "So how do you get into professional speaking?" And she said, "Well, you put it on your LinkedIn profile and just go for it." As I started flipping them up, and I thought, maybe it is that easy, you know, be the change you want to see, you know, a bit of Gandhi in there sort of thing. And I just thought, okay, I'm a professional speaker. Bumped into the Professional Speaking Association, got invited along to one of their meetings, and found a tribe of people that resonated and are all talking about speaking in whatever form that is. That's kind of stage speaking, workshop speaking, coaching, all that, anything to do with, you know, earning money through your mouth, effectively. It's kind of the mantra. So yeah, that's how I embarked on this journey. And it became quite clear to me that it wasn't all about me. And I'm aware that, you know, you could become a bit of a matriarch to your own cause and try and champion it. And it becomes a very personal mission. And I realized I didn't have any anger or fire that was burning about me. And I realized that, you know, in the world, there's a lot of inequity. There's a lot of marginalization. There's a lot of people who aren't thriving. And my mission became really more about creating a better place in the world for everyone to thrive and succeed. And if the world is welcoming for everybody, I'm part of everyone. So I help myself through creating a better environment for the world. So that was kind of how I evolved into it. And I got lucky a few times. I bumped into a few people, did a good bit of networking, got involved, got invited. And so my career grew and blossomed a bit. So yeah, just through fortuitous networking opportunities, I ended up speaking in Australia, North America, all over Europe. And then the COVID hit, and I ended up doing more, just sat in the chair, just a bit like I'm sat now. I built my studio. I've got screens, I've got lights, I've got cameras. So I built my home studio, and I became very successful over COVID doing online lunch and learns, webinars, hosting panels. And it became a very lucrative 2 or 3 years for me speaking online. And I still do a lot of it now.
And you're a really compelling speaker. I speak from experience, having listened to you speak and present. And the presentation that you gave us back in January kind of started off with the why of D&I. So I wonder if you could tell us what is your why of D&I, and tell us about its importance.
Yeah. I'm very passionate about this, because it's very easy to pay lip service, and they're sort of EDI, D&I, they're buzzwords. To coin a phrase, they're woke. It's of the moment. Everyone's talking about it. It's trendy. There are hashtags. And if you're not careful as an individual and as a business, you can fall into this trap of just following the trend without really understanding the why. And for me, understanding the why creates sustainability of mission, sustainability of purpose. It means you're actually committed to it as not just a good thing and a right thing, but also a tangible return. Because I'm a realist. Businesses have to generate revenue. They have to be profitable. They have to employ people. They have costs. And whilst you can be benevolent and you can be compassionate, the bottom line has to be, there seems to be some sort of ROI. And the ROI I'm talking about here is return on inclusion. So we can talk about discretionary effort in people. We can talk about reducing hiring costs. We can talk about reduced empty seat costs. We can talk about better productivity, less errors, more opportunity to get broader candidates for our roles. So all of these fall into that kind of business benefit. So for people who need to see that spreadsheet, they need to see that bottom line, they need to see the value of the investment, that we can quite clearly demonstrate some of these tangible benefits. But the problem is, as everyone will know, the facts don't change people. I can tell you all of those facts, all those statistics, Gartner, McKinsey, Deloitte, everybody's putting out these stats online, and you Google it, benefits of EDI, and they'll come out with these graphs for you. So if it's that easy to be more profitable as a business, why isn't everybody embracing it in their heart? So they don't. So we've got to appreciate the facts aren't going to change. So what we've got to do is look at the human factor. And for me, I talk about these three pillars of ancient Greece, you know, ethos, pathos, and logos. Ethos being compliance. For want of a better way of putting it, the ethical response is the Equality Act. It's we have to do it, we comply. But I always say that's kind of EDI level zero. That's the minimum we should be doing. And then we got logos, which is the kind of the logical response, the business case, for want of a better way of describing it. It makes sense. But we also have to recognize it's also the pathos, which is the human factor, you know, the emotional response. And for me, inclusion is a feeling. Do I feel included? Do I feel belonging? Do I feel part of something? Do I feel safe? Can I speak up? How do I feel that? So by focusing on the emotional response, the feeling response, and putting that at the core of your strategy and direction, then I believe that the business case, the spreadsheet, the compliance, the legal side, they'll fall into place as well. And it also means as a business, you're more authentic, you come across in the right way, because who wants to be a statistic, to be tokenized or a pawn or a plaything in the corporate strategy? We want to feel that it's about me. Mm. I want to succeed. I want to thrive. Mm. So that's why I talk about the why. And the double edge. Why does it matter to me as an individual? And why does it matter to my organization? And I think when you look at a board of directors, people sitting around the table, the people who are there to drive strategy forward, they have to get it themselves before the business can get it. Mm. Everyone around that table has to get it. And for me, the question you asked me is, what's my why? As a trans woman, I guess I've experienced some marginalization. My wife and I have jointly experienced some stigma, some challenges. My wife experienced challenges in her employment when she worked for somebody. She now works with me. Our children had to come out, having a dad who's trans. So we've kind of experienced that realignment of privilege. Mm. And I can talk about privilege a bit more. But so what I used to live a life where I really didn't consider the needs or feelings of anybody else specifically. I was just being me, a blinkered this approach. And I think what happened was when I stepped out of that privilege lane and acquired some marginalization, I went, whoa, blimey, this is pretty dark and cold out here. This is, and then suddenly, once you're in that non-privileged zone, you start to hear stories from other people. It's almost like kindred spirits between people who are oppressed, marginalized. But there's always this kind of, you know, I know type conversations. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking to somebody who has a disability, who has neurodiversity, or is black or brown, or has a particular characteristic, I've got my in on that conversation, and it doesn't feel like I'm being invasive. It doesn't feel like I'm questioning them. Whereas somebody who is apparently, and it's very judgmental, apparently privileged, starts to engage in this conversation, saying, well, what do you know? You know, I'm not going to be your educator. I'm not here to tell you what to think. So as I say, I've now got a membership card of the marginalized club that I can now use to talk to other people. And that's what really opened my eyes, to listen to women talk about everyday sexism. And there's a great book by Laura Bates called Everyday Feminism, or Everyday Sexism, I think it's called. And I listen to it on audio books, and you hear women telling these stories, and it's so powerful. And I watched the Priscilla movie the other week, and it really, at the end of that Priscilla movie, I really didn't like Elvis at all at the end of it, because it really told a story of how she, as a wife, was treated. I mean, yesterday we saw Wicked Little Letters, I think it was called, Wicked Letters. It was a story about someone writing poison pen letters back in the 1930s or 40s, whenever it was. And there was a whole tale in there around male oppression, misogynistic behavior, how the police would not listen to a woman police officer. The woman police officer was seen as a joke. The daughter in this family was effectively treated in a certain way. So you start to, when you realize about marginalization, when you understand that why of it, you hear these stories, and it's kind of like someone's turned the lights on or turned the volume up. You go, wow, I can hear it all now. And I think that's what really surprised me. And that's if you like, keeping the passion and the flame alive in my why is I now hear those stories, and I now have, you know, empathy and compassion for those, and a shared desire to push back against the systems that create this marginalization.
Where does motivation come into all of this? So, you know, how does it factor into the way that we look at D&I?
Yeah, I think it's to use an overquoted word, multifaceted. It's there are lots of different angles on this, and as I say, some of the motivation is public perception, being seen to do the right thing. We saw this around Black Lives Matter. Suddenly, every company was putting out hashtag Black Lives Matter, putting out public statements, and of course, then their black employees were saying, "Nah, this isn't the company I work for. That's not the real story." So that's where the inauthenticity can come in. You know, you jump into your PR machine, you throw it out there, and then you get called out because that's not the real experience. So that is a challenge. And I always say to people, when you're using recruitment marketing, employer branding, all these kind of things, it has to be an element of reality in there. If you're not selling who you are and trying to sell who you want to be, or who you think you should be, or who you think people think you should be, that's where the inauthenticity comes from. So you need to fix your toxicity, you know, clean the tank out before you put the new fish in, root out that nasty smell in the storeroom, whatever analogy you want to use, because all you end up doing is putting all the effort into these marketing campaigns, or, you know, branding, for want of a better way of describing it, but the reality doesn't live up to the demo mode. You know, not actual game footage, as I would call it. It's just a perception of what you want to be, and that's not necessarily the company's fault. It's just the system of the company. There's a desire. Someone defines the brand, someone markets the brand, and then people implement the brand. And there's a disconnect often between those layers of the implementation of the brand and the values than the ideation that occurs in the brand strategists. So I get how it happens. And the people interaction often comes down to a one-on-one conversation, how I deal with the people I meet who represent, whether that's in a shop, whether that's on the telephone, whether it's in a product I'm procuring, the service I get from that. It comes down to that interaction I have, which is why when I talk about EDI and D&I, it's about positive people experiences, not about diversity, not equality, not about all these things. It's what's my experience in dealing and interacting with you as a candidate, as an employee, as a stakeholder, as a customer, or whatever that may be. Your team, effectively, Dave, from what I understand, are marketeers. The people you work with are marketeers. And it's all around creating that positive brand attraction. That's all I'm talking about here, is creating that positive experience that I feel that from you as an individual, and you as a business and organization as well, and what you stand for, which is why we look at some recent cases in CBI, for example. They turn their brand from being lobbyists in government, involved in the higher echelons of business community, to becoming a kind of toxic brand, just through the fact they didn't handle that situation of sexism correctly. And I'm not trying to sit here and say this will happen, that happened, what's right, what's wrong. But their brand fell apart.
Hmm.
They didn't manage their brand. They didn't deal with that effectively. So they created negative experiences of them. And that's then paid off. So I think, yeah, businesses have to recognize this. And this is not trying to bully or blackmail anybody, but it's the reality of the world. News travels fast. Bad news travels lightning fast. And good news travels much slower. So it's really recognizing that as a business, the power of the positive, authentic brand.
So how is it that as marketing leaders, we can unlock a more kind of inclusive leadership, would you say?
I think a lot of these things have to be a collective message from the organization as a whole. This cannot start from marketing. It cannot start from sales. It cannot start from the shop floor. There has to be a culture of the board, culture of the CEO, the chair, whoever it is, brings that culture down. Yes, the culture has to live at the bottom, but people, the example people emulate is the people above them, the people who inspire them, the people who lead them. So I think marketing need to be part of that creation of the brand identity, the value statements. HR are in there as well. The DEI teams are in there. Corporate communications are in there. Staff are in there, obviously, to ideate their brand values. And we do lots of listening sessions and understanding it, much as marketing would go out to the field and talk to potential customers and do some brand analysis. So I think listening is a really good idea. But marketing are kind of one dimension of the overall strategy. And I often talk about this when we talk about recruitment, is there's different priorities in this process.
Hmm.
In recruitment, there's often an empty seat. There's often a cost per hire, and there's often an outcome you want. If you're not careful, you want to do it cheaper and fast. If you do cheap and fast, you don't always get the success, or maybe you don't explore all of the candidates. You go for the, oh, here's a CV. We need to get someone in next week. Quick hire them. And that may well be the usual suspect. It may not have been a wholly inclusive recruitment process. So at some point, we've got to recognize it. We've got to maybe slow down or put more money at it in order to get the outcome we want. So I think with marketing and brand and things like that, it's like anything. You have to invest in it. It's not about rushing it. And I also recognize that business doesn't always have the patience for these long things. They want it. We need to run this product now. It's Christmas coming up. We need to start doing it today. Hang on a minute, we should have thought about this last Christmas and started for next Christmas. But yeah, hopefully you know what I'm saying there is, it's, you've got to invest. The marketing's responsibility is really to listen and coach about the brand ethics, I think, and put it out there and make sure that that authenticity exists and it aligns with reality as well.
Okay. What would you say are the barriers then that an organization might come across towards inclusion?
Typical barriers are resistance to change. I think that goes for many, many aspects. You know, incumbents saying, well, it's worked okay. People feeling challenged by privilege, their privilege being challenged. You know, people coming... accusing the white man of being irrelevant today, and we need to be more diverse, and that undervalues the contribution that all people are making. And I'm a great believer, you can't be more inclusive by excluding. It's about bringing everybody on this journey, not demonizing, dehumanizing, or devaluing anybody. It's about being, I always struggle to say this word, additive. It's about adding, not awing or othering. Okay. Bringing more people into the conversation. Yeah, it's not a zero-sum game. If I get something, you get less. It's not a zero-sum. It's about there's always space for more chairs around the table. There's always more pizza. You're not dipping out by giving your slice to somebody else. It's recognizing that it is about the power of more. And I think what I always talk about here is the perspectives. If we're not careful, what we have is we have a very blinkered view based on our lived experience, our faith, race, ethnicity, our gender, our sex, our sexuality, whatever that may be, we speak through our own lens, and we very rarely see what troubles others. So by having more voices at the table, more voices in the room, more people questioning, more people saying why, or really, tell me, explain that, we get more perspective. And it's not that someone's right and someone's wrong, it's just that their perspectives are their perspectives. So sometimes we need to step back on that and see a bigger picture.
Okay. And so that brings belonging. How do we know if the people we're working with are feeling that belonging?
Well, traditionally, we see organizations putting out pulse surveys. Once a year, you get an email in your inbox saying, complete the survey by Friday. And everyone trots off and does their survey thing. And then we get, I don't know, 30% return rate.
And half of those are... job is done.
Yeah. And someone says, oh, hang on a minute. 60% of our responses are preferred not to say. So that's the first clue. If you get lots of preferred not to says and low response rate, that's a red flag to me, saying, well, we've got low psychological safety. We've got low engagement. We've got people who either are bored of telling you or don't feel safe enough to report. They don't trust what you're going to do with the data. So that's the initial survey answer, is who engages. Like general elections, you know, you look at some of the recent by-elections in the UK, we see low engagement. People just don't want to engage in the process. They're disillusioned with the party politics. High engagement implies that people are really bought into the process. So, I always think sometimes if we're not careful, we do these big employee engagement surveys once a year, and that's too big an interval. I'm a great believer in what I would call micro surveys, touch points. That could be as simple as your team lead, your manager, just saying, how are we doing? Got a few secs. What can we do different? What's happening? Is it working for you? Mini appraisal type stuff, touch points. I always think about it, it's a bit, I don't know if they still do it, but Currys, the electrical retailer, as you leave the shop, they've got this little button pad. They've got a green, an amber, and a red little buttons as you leave the shop. How are we doing today? And most people are kind of, meh, you're just a shop, and they walk straight past it. Some people have an amazing experience, or they really feel happy, and they're going to bash the green one and go, yep, you've been fantastic. Some people just want to be angry, and they'll push the red one. But it's not necessarily looking at the one-off. It's looking at the trend analysis. If suddenly you go from ambivalent people who just go, meh, walk past it and don't care, to suddenly you're getting an increase in reds, that says something's going wrong. So it's that trend you're looking for, not necessarily a snapshot in time. So by micro-surveying, how are people doing? In the bottom of an email, every time HR sends something out, just, how are we doing? How are you feeling? Little buttons on the as you're leaving. Drop a green token in the slot as you're coming out. Just however you can interact, because that will give the organization the heartbeat of the organization on a delta, on a trend, and they can see the evolution. And then, I don't know, with a bit of luck, they'll pick it up as that hockey stick graph develops, and they can cut it off and say, hang on a minute. We're going the wrong way here. What's happened? Oh, yeah, we changed CEO. We had a department restructure. Or we lost some customers. Or we were in the news for the wrong reasons, or whatever it was, what went on. There'll be a trigger event. And we by keeping that micro survey closer to the trigger events, you've got more likely to spot when those events become divisive, toxic, or disruptive to the organization. You know, you've just made a lot of people redundant. Yeah, there's going to be a real uptick in dissatisfaction. We've got to, how do we bring that curve back down again?
So, in summary, Joanne, what would you say are the kind of three key things that you would want the marketers who are listening to this podcast to take away and bear in mind in their working week ahead?
I'd like them to reflect on how they feel in their organization. So they are their own litmus test as to, are they feeling a sense of belonging, a sense of inclusion as an individual? Mm. What are they seeing? Are they frustrated with the management? Are they frustrated with the way it is? Are they frustrated with the climate inside? Mm. what do they, how do they perceive their, the brand that they're representing, if you like, in the marketplace? Are they feeling that themselves? So I think self-reflection, and you know, because if you're not feeling it, how can you sell it to somebody else? It's got to start with that. It's got to start with that. And I guess the second stage is, what can I do about it? You know, I'm not feeling good, or I am feeling good. So what can I do? Can I amplify? Can I keep the momentum going? Or can I start a conversation and call it out and say, hang on a minute, we're not getting there. So you've got to kind of take responsibility, or you've got to make a positive decision and say, I can't change this. If it's not working for me, maybe this isn't my place. I need to go somewhere else and maybe, yeah, look for another job in an organization that does value and treat you right, or has a positive brand. I suppose thirdly, back comes a bit off at number two, is become an advocate, you know, calling it out, calling it in, educating, taking some responsibility for that change. I think if we all throw the towel in, nothing ever happens. Mm. Not everybody's up for that journey. I think you could be a mentor. You could be somebody who can encourage others. You can help change policy. Again, it depends on what level you are. You may see yourself as a small cog in a big wheel, but everybody can influence when I say courage, I don't mean that in a big C kind of, just the kind of the willingness to want to step up and have a conversation. Because there's always someone in the organization that says, wow, thank you for telling me. I never realized that you felt that way. I didn't realize that was the situation. Because again, these barriers between top and bottom in organizations and it's not always easy to have those conversations, but yeah, if you're passionate and care enough and want to change things, you can. So that's the kind of three things blended into a long monologue. But yeah,
that's cool. And you've
self-analysis.
You've also got a number of tools that can help people, right? So you have a podcast, a newsletter, a YouTube channel. Do you want to tell us a little bit about where people can go if what they've listened to today is of interest to them?
Of course, yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. So my name is Joanne Lockwood. Googling me, my name, I pretty much occupy the first three or four pages of Google with various hairstyles and colors, and my website's in there and other things. So my website is seechangehappen.co.uk. And on there, there's an In the Media tab, and you'll see articles I've written in magazines, publications such as HR Zone, Training Zone, HR Director Magazine, those kind of publications. My YouTube channel, where I've been guests on shows, I record some inclusion bites, video, some learning materials, and I've also got my podcast, which is called Inclusion Bites Podcast. And you'll find that linked off the website, or if you Google Inclusion Bites, that's BITES, you'll find it on Apple, Google, iTunes, Spotify, all those kind of usual places. So yeah, start with my name, bounce to my website, and then everything should be indexed and linked from there.
Joanne Lockwood, you're an inspiration. Thank you very much for talking to me today.
Absolute pleasure, Dave. Thank you so much.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, Joanne Lockwood. Thanks to our technical person, Alicia Gratian. And thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can. And email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from, just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk.